What's good, Wager World? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. And you're with my co-host, the OG of the show. Been with me since day one, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreadster? How are you this morning?
Man, I'm excited to talk to you about some NFL, Five Star. I was telling my other friends that I network with on the NFL, I think this is the toughest weekend of the year. We got about 3 to 4 really good teams, and then we got about 20 teams that could all beat each other on any given night, and then there's about 4 or 5 really bad teams. So because of that, it just seems like a lot of these matchups, you can make good arguments both ways, and I can't wait to find out where you land on some of these games.
Man, before we get into the past, I have to say this, man. Rest in peace to Amir Abdul-Rahim. He was the South Florida basketball coach. Passed at the 10 days of 43, man, right up in our age group. Spread, you know, real awakening to, you know, us. Every day we go out here and we live life like, you know, every day is promised, and it's not, man. He was coming off an historically good season in his first year with South Florida. He went to the hospital on a basic procedure, died during the procedure, man, on some complications. Thought he was going to see his family when he came home that night. His wife was waiting for him. He never made it home, man. Unfortunately, passed in the Tampa Bay area hospital. He played basketball in southeastern Louisiana, which is really familiar to me, being from Louisiana originally and growing up in that part of the world. That's a school in Hammond. He was a really good player there. Real rising star amongst the coaching ranks, man. He wasn't going to be at South Florida too long. I know you remember his brother, Sharif Abdul-Rahim. 13 brothers and sisters, man, and Sharif was the NBA star of the family. But Amir was really doing a good job down at South Florida, man. And prior to that, he had took Kennesaw State, a really lowly program that had one win from 2019 to 2020. And he took them to an NCAA berth, the first for that school's history, 26-9 record. That's what got him the job at South Florida. And I remember being South Florida a lot this year, this past spring, and I couldn't believe how good they were. And that was all due to Coach Abdul-Rahim. And I just want to say rest in peace to him. Prayers for his wife, his 3 children, man. He had 2 daughters and a son. Carpe diem. Seize the day. That's the word for the day on the Wager World, guys. If you ever were planning to do a business, planning to start working out, planning to heal some relationships in your life, today is the day to do it, man. Today is not promised. We see what happened to this young coach, Amir Abdul-Rahim. Everything was promising for him. This was going to be one of the biggest years in South Florida basketball history. And here he is. He passed, you know. And it's just really sad. They haven't even named the coach yet over there because it was so unexpected. So anyone watching the show right now, I want you guys to hit that like button. And I want you guys to think today about the things that you've been putting off, and go ahead and do them, man. Carpe diem, seize the day. All right, Spread, let's get into the past.
All right, the first thing I want to talk about, Five Star, we admit when we get a little lucky, and I felt a little lucky with this one, but guess what? The money spent the same. Right. And that's the Indiana Pacers, who I thought they were really going to put it on the Detroit Pistons. Tyrese Halliburton had one of his worst games that we've seen for a while. Couldn't get anything going from 3. And the Pacers really struggled. And it was typical NBA, where the better team in the final 3 minutes just took over. Halliburton finally made a couple shots. I don't know if the game was on the line, but the cover was on the line at that point. And the Indiana Pacers win by 6 over the Detroit Pistons. So couple things I noticed. There are some good additions to that Pistons team. I think they're building the team right over there. And Indiana's got a fun team. And I hope that they start to get things together because they definitely look rusty to start the season.
Man, and I trailed you on that game, but you know I bet, Spread. I bet it first half only. So I busted down and I lost the first half pretty bad. Me and the clients, I think the Pistons won the first half money line on that game. The key to what the Pistons are trying to do is, I have to wonder, are we going to ever see Cade Cunningham for a full season? You know, that's the whole thing. He's the key to what they're trying to do over there. So far, that whole class has been a somewhat disappointment because, I mean, Jalen Green in Houston has not been too impressed, and we'll get to that game next when we get into Sino's pick that he gave out on here with them losing to Charlotte in the home opener. But if Cade Cunningham can play, the Pistons could be all right. They have a pretty decent roster around him. I really like Jalen Duran. So I think that they could get some things done. And also, how's the health of Osir Thompson? You know, how's Thompson going to be healthy as they try to rebuild the culture in Detroit? A lot of people don't realize Detroit was a really good team when we were growing up, and they went to hell in the last couple of years, man. So I'd like to see them be back good again. The Pacers, I don't know if they have a winning formula over there. They pretty much just play cardio basketball, you know, and we saw that before with the Rockets with D'Antoni, and when he was with Phoenix, it can take you only so far. I watched the beginning of the game, and I had to turn it. It was getting on my nerves because it was basically open gym. Spread wasn't any defense. They're just running and shooting. So I don't know how that's going to work for Rick Carlisle and those guys.
Well, I got them to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and it's a boom or bust strategy because when they're hot, they look unstoppable, right? Because yeah. They're quicker than the other team. They're tiring them out, and all the shots are falling. But when the shots aren't falling, it is some ugly basketball. So let's talk about your favorite team. And do you remember how shocked I was when Sino gave the pick out?
Yeah.
But, you know, I work all afternoon, and I jump on around 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, and give out, you know, my final NBA looks. And the more I looked into it, I said, Sino's exactly on the right side. I almost want to go back to the Hornets tonight. My concern is Brandon Miller hurt himself during that game. He will be missing tonight. But LaMelo Ball, when he's playing like that, he's an excellent player, and they put the strong defensive pieces around him. And I've always said you can afford to have a weak defensive guard. You just can't afford to have a weak defensive center. There's lots of guards that aren't very good defensively that teams are able to scheme around. It's just that rim protection that you really need. So Charlotte does have a chance there. But you brought up Jalen Green, and he got a contract extension. And I'm sitting there, and I was watching that one, and I'm thinking, are you guys going to end up the same road as Sacramento? You know, is Jalen Green going to be your De'Aaron Fox, and is Alperen Sengun going to be your Domantas Sabonis? Two offensive-only players. They're going to give you a bunch of regular season wins. What did you think of the extension for both those men, and what did you see in that game? Because I personally was surprised that they extended both of them. I thought they would choose one and let go of the other.
Well, at this point, the Rockets are going to have to move forward because the fan base like myself and others are very sick and tired of losing because we went through some down years attempting to rebuild after the Harden teams. And now it's to the point where how many years are you going to suck and continue to accumulate draft picks? Now it's time to keep it moving and go to the next level. So that's why you're hearing the Rockets in a lot of trade rooms. I don't like the composition of this team for the Rockets. The problem I have most of all is Van Fleet. As you know, I feel like that's a wasted contract. Van Fleet has the green light and doesn't deserve the green light because he's a veteran, has a championship ring, 4-18 from the field, 2-11 from three-point line. Like, when are you going to have some awareness to stop shooting? You know, and that's the problem. They allow him to do whatever he wants to do. Then, as you said, they re-up Alper, who Sengun has a chance of being really good, but is he going to be able to be a defensive help as well? Is he just going to be one-sided ball? Because is he so special offensively that his defense doesn't matter? Jalen Green puts up 28 points on 9-23, 5-15. The fan base is saying it all on the timeline. What does he do besides shoot? So he has to figure out a way to do some other things. 0 assists, 2 rebounds, like, at 6'5 and all the athleticism that he has, I don't understand what's going on with Jalen Green. I know we have a really good coach over there, but he has to get through to this kid. I feel like he's not playing to his full potential. It's almost like, in my opinion, that our bench, the guys on the bench should be the guys in our starting lineup, like Cam Whitmore, Amir Thompson, Tari Eason, Reed Shepard. Those guys, to me, would be a better and more formidable starting group, in my opinion, and what they're going out there with. But Udoka's been doing this a long time. You got to trust the process. If you remember last year, the Rockets got blew out as well. Really disappointed with Jabari Smith Jr. Like, As you know, we were on the show. I wanted them to draft Jabari Smith. You look back at that 2022-2023 draft, there were two stars at the top. We got the rotation player because the other two guys are stars. You got Chet Holmgren in OKC. He's a star, about to be perennially an all-star. And then you go look at Paolo Banchero, same way in Orlando, perennial all-star coming, different type of talent, taking the team to a whole nother level. Just really a bad break for the Rockets being the third pick, and everyone was saying that Jabari was going to go number one, but that tells you about how these teams play such a cat and mouse game when it comes to draft, because no one thought that Jabari Smith would fall to the Rockets, and he did, and then ended up where the two players that were chosen before him were actually better pros than him, and they've so far shown that they are. I don't know if Jabari comes on later and reaches their level, but he's really slowly developing, and I feel like when you're good, you're a difference maker, it's going to pop easily. That's why I feel like he's, you know, pretty much going to be a rotation player the rest of his career, you know, which is cool, but not for the third pick in the draft, and not when you have the type of guys that went with him in that draft that he'll always be judged by. As far as the Hornets, LaMelo Ball is in for the Hornets, it's a go. He's always been very talented, one of the best young players in the world. It's just, can he stay healthy? Are they going to, you know, be able to survive after wearing those janky shoes for so long? Those big baller brands messed their feet up, messed their legs up. So now him and his brother miss time all the time. I can't remember either one of them playing for a whole season in so long. It's ridiculous. So if LaMelo can play for the whole season, he's still an awesome player. I almost got a triple double, had 34 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds. Unlike Jalen Green, he's a part of every aspect of the game. So he's different. If a team can trade for LaMelo Ball and get him out of Charlotte, you better make a move, because I think he would really do well in a big market. I don't think he's that motivated with Charlotte. It's just like a money grab because he knows they're not going to win anything. I'd love to see him with a competitive team. I think he's that type of player. But overall, great handicap by Sino.
Yeah, and I appreciate him for getting me to look in that direction, and that was something that we enjoyed. A couple thoughts on what you have to say. I would like to see LaMelo not be the top dog on his team. I mean, yeah, LaMelo. We got it right. where he gets pushed by a veteran. When we look at Anthony Davis, how much he's benefited from not being the number one and being pushed by LeBron, I think that we've seen some great things there. And I don't think LaMelo's like an Anthony Edwards where he's just super self-motivated. I would love to see him, you know, behind a Jimmy Butler or you know, a player like that who's really going to teach him how to be a pro. And I know I'm going to sound old here, and it's never going back to this, but Five-Star, we've talked so much about how the one and done really hurts the quality of the NBA product. Not only are these players coming in not ready, but I also feel they get their extensions too early. And we talk about being self-motivated, and a lot of these guys, they get their second contract, and they're done, they're set for life. And they've achieved their goals, and we don't see
24. They're like 24 when they get it.
Yeah, and I mean, you got over $100 million in the bank, blah 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 blah. But sometimes I wonder if these guys are rewarded too early, because we'll see what happens there with Jalen Green. But you know, good pick by Sino, and we'll see where these franchises go forward. One thing that I know I do actually better at it in the NFL is not overreacting. I tend to really overreact to the first couple games in the NBA. So let's see if these teams can get back on track. We talk about, you know what? I might even throw it up here. We haven't used this one for a while. Bad beat, bad break, or bad handicap.
Yeah.
I'm giving us the bad beat last night on the Minnesota Vikings, and I'll tell you why. You know when I knew we were done, Five-Star? What? Is when Christian Darrisaw went out of the game. And he means so much to that team. And at this point, when you're handicapping teams on the offense, the left tackle is more important than your running back, more important than any wide receiver. You know, it was more important to them than Justin Jefferson in my mind, and great as Justin Jefferson is. He might be the best wide receiver in the game today. But when they lost that left tackle, I knew we were in trouble. So I'm going to take the bad beat there. Now, it could have gone either way, but to me, that kind of sealed it, that we were in trouble. What did you see in that one?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a bad beat. Unfortunately, if you guys watched Jay Money Show yesterday, you were able to win some with me as well. We gave out Vikings money line on here as a very strong lean, not an official play, just kind of talking it out. But still, we definitely were on the Vikings. But remember, I said on that show too, on the last show spread, if Cooper Kupp plays, Minnesota will be in trouble, man. And he played because Minnesota is really bad on the back end, and we're starting to see that. They're really being exposed. They got some guys who have big names, but they're in the back, you know, end of their career. So they're not as fast, not as nimble as they were before. And it's a lot of advantages that offensive coordinators are finding out against Brian Flores' defense. You know, that's the same tree that he faced the past couple weeks. It's still Ben Johnson runs a lot of the passing tree that you're going to see ran by guys like Shanahan, guys like Kevin O'Connell, who coaches with the Vikings, and also like we saw last night with Sean McVay. They're going to test you vertically. They're going to run seam routes. They're going to run deep ends. And if you can block up the Vikings and keep their pressure, you can win all day. And that's what we saw the second half. Is not only does Cooper Kupp comes back, but Puka Nacua comes back and has a huge game. But if you on Jay Money Show, which I do every Thursday, I kind of anticipated that this game was going to get janky towards the end. So that's why we got in and got out. We got Vikings first quarter money line at -130. We got Vikings first quarter minus a half at +125. Vikings first half money line was pushed. And we also took Kyron Williams to score a touchdown, which cashed in like the first quarter as well. So we had a really good first half. The rest of the game, I kind of just watched it. I didn't make a halftime bit, but as I start watching the game more and more, it's clear that the Rams aren't milling in this year. I think that was just a little bluff that they threw out there, what they were going to trade Stafford and Cooper Kupp, because they looked really good on offense last night. If they have their whole offense in place, they can go pretty far in the playoffs, because that side of the world, the NFC, is pretty wide open.
A couple of things I want to point out there. I know that the Rams did find success against Stafford. I don't know how many teams, I mean, the Rams had success with Stafford. I don't know how many teams are going to be able to replicate that, though, because that success was based on his ability to make the reads quickly and basically negate the pass rush the same way we used to see Brady and Manning, and that's by getting the ball out in 2.5 seconds or less. A lot of these younger quarterbacks, they're not processing as fast. So just because Stafford was able to do it, we know he's a veteran, and I consider him to be the most underrated quarterback of his generation. I'm not sure if other people will be able to replicate that success. But, you know, the Vikings, that's going to be really rough for them. You know, short week. Now they've got two losses in a row. And I really think missing that left tackle. Do you have an idea how long Darisaw's out? Because if he's out for a while,
I think it'll
be the end of a nice little story.
Back to the mean, you know, like we're starting to see Sam, and that's the great thing about sports, right, Spread? Like, we already know these guys and what they've done if we watch them long enough. And kind of now you're seeing Sam Darnold, especially without his left tackle, he's going to come back towards the mean. Brock Purdy, without his weapons now, you know, they kind of expose themselves after a while. And as the season keeps going, more games you see, more plays you see, these guys always kind of come back to who they are, you know, just like people. You know, people might act like they changed or whatever, but at the end of the day, at the core, they're still who they're going to be. And after a while and after time passes, they always come back to who you are essentially. And I think that, well, that's what we're seeing with Sam Darnold, what we're seeing with the Vikings, because we really didn't pay much attention to the Vikings coming into the season. And then we saw this great start by them. I hope they don't do like the Saints and bottom all the way out, but that defense has not looked good the last 2 weeks, and I thought that that was the main strength of the team. Without them being able to stop people, they can't outscore people with Sam Darnold at quarterback, no matter how good Kevin O'Connell is with X and O's.
Yeah, and we'll see how that happens. I do think the defense will make a resurgence. It's just those quarterbacks who can get the ball out quickly. Goff, Stafford, good offensive line, it kind of negates what they do best. So, you know, I was hoping the Vikings fun story would continue. Now the Rams may be back in play to win that wide open NFC West.
Yeah, they definitely in play.
They do have the best coach, and they still do have the best quarterback in the division. So, well, you can argue Shanahan's the best coach, but they have the best quarterback in the division.
No.
You like McVay more?
Yeah, McVay is the better coach. You know, I don't like his
I know you don't like him, so for you to say that, that's like really the
antics. I've never disliked him personally.
I know. You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, he's a great dude. I think he's a really cool dude. I like how he talks at the podium. I like how he supports his guys. I like how positive he is. I think he's brilliant. We talk about LeBron James. You talk about nepotism, and he made the most out of it. His granddad worked for the Redskins or something, for the Washington team, and so he became like the youngest guy ever in coaching. He was like in his late 20s, early 20s, maybe like 24, 25, I want to say, coaching receivers and stuff with Washington back in the game under Shanahan, and that's why they're so cool and that's why they're so close. But he's great. McVay's awesome. Anyone that watches football knows McVay is awesome. And maybe I need to post on the show right now when he puts his hand on Shanahan's head and suns him. That's why he's the best coach in that conference, because he's the only one with a Super Bowl ring spread. Shanahan does not have a Super Bowl ring. Sean McVay does. And he's been to two as well. He's 1-1. Whereas in your guy Shanahan is 0-2. So McVay is clearly the best coach in that division.
All right. So you're liking McVay there, and the Rams staying alive this season and have to be excited about the return. Maybe that takes Cooper Kupp off the trade market.
He's not going to win.
All right, five-star. NBA and NFL were both on last night, so I didn't see any college football. Help me out here. Talk to me about Syracuse at Pittsburgh.
Oh, man, that was one of the best bets I've made all season, right up there with Indiana last week. Being a client, just had a ball with this one. We played Pittsburgh -5.5, but we played them huge for the first half, -3. Kyle McCord got exposed. Great job by Narduzzi in that defense. They had 2 pick six in the first quarter. And the second one, man, I'm out with the kids at Trunk or Treat. We walk around spread, getting candy and stuff like that, and I'm watching it on my phone. When they got the pick six, he's trying to run and get in, and these guys try to tackle him. I'm like, go, MF! Go, MF! So all the kids and teachers are looking like, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, excuse me. I was too hyped watching that one, man, but great job by Pitt, and that was just a dominant performance. From beginning to end on that one. Syracuse, now they've been exposed for who they really are. I don't know how UNLV allowed them to come out here and steal the win. They're good, but they're a super finesse team. They throw the ball way too much. Fran Brown, who's their new coach, came in a little too arrogant and cocky after they started the season successful. You can't come in running your mouth and you haven't done anything yet. 5 interceptions by Kyle McCord. Eli Holstein does something he hasn't done all year. Protects the ball. 11 out of 15, 108, 2 touchdowns. And they don't turn the ball over. Pitt's going to be right there at the end. They might mess around and get in the ACC championship. They're 6-0 right now. They've been before. Pat Narduzzi just goes about his business. He's quietly built a really good team over there, and they get a lot of good feel from that program as well. So just a great job, Pitt. Glad that we were able to cash, and hope you guys played the lean that I gave out on you.
Jump in Boise State at UNLV. These are coming on tonight, right? So what are the picks for these three games? Let's start with Boise State at UNLV.
Last show, we broke it down a little bit about that game. I'm taking UNLV, man. I have to go with UNLV. I know the Broncos are really good, but they're carried by a running back, Ashton Jeanty, man, who is not going to have the type of success he's had against everyone else against UNLV. UNLV is 20th ranked against the run. They have a top-notch linebacker in Jackson Woodard. That's my guy. He's a really good player, 63 tackles. I think he's going to be a big-time player in the NFL. He also has 4 interceptions, which is outstanding for a middle linebacker. The quarterback of the defense on that team. And I think that him, Ricky White, are just going to be a little bit too amped and playing too good at home. Haj Malik Williams now makes it where the offense for UNLV is much more explosive than it was with Matt Sluka. And as I said, the thing that the Rebels do was get physical at the line and play really good against the run. I think Ashton Jeanty gets his Heisman took tonight. Give me UNLV +3.5.
All right, we're taking the Rebels plus the points. Recap the pick on Louisville at Boston College.
On that one, we're going with Thomas Castellanos and Bill O'Brien. We think that the Boston College Eagles fly at home. I think that Boston College gets it done +7.5, and they might be a live money line dog too against Louisville, who has to be kind of broken from losing to Miami and to losing to Notre Dame.
The final game we want to review for tonight, Rutgers taking on USC. USC 3-4, man, can't believe it. I thought Lincoln Riley was going to bring pride and championship mantra back down to Los Angeles, back out to California. Simply hasn't happened yet. Oregon still rules the West Coast.
Yeah, remember I gave this one out on the bowling parlay. We're on USC first half -7.5, so we're waiting on that one. You guys got the first two legs. Let's get that USC -7.5 first half. I just think that USC has struggled, but they played really well in the first half. As I told you, they've not been good on defense as bad. Alexander left, but I really like their defensive coordinator. I think that De'Anton Lynn is next up as far as in the best young coaches in America. I think he shuts down a really basic Rutgers team. Rutgers also, this is their first time traveling from the East Coast to the West Coast to play a conference game. I would not be surprised if they're half asleep when this game starts. It starts at 11 p.m. for their body clock for kickoff. So I think the Trojans get on them early. Not a big fan of Calicamaeus, which is their quarterback. And Scarlet Knights usually play good defense. They haven't been playing good defense for Rutgers, man. They gave up 300 yards rushing to Wisconsin 2 weeks ago. And last week they let UCLA, who is nothing like USC when it comes to throwing the ball, go 32 of 38 for 383 yards passing. I think this one gets ugly in the first half. Give me USC first half -7.5.
All right. So we got three plays there, but five star, we're not done, man. I hope you got plenty of money in your account. I hope you haven't been withdrawing like me, because we got a lot of plays to get into. Man, five star, I can't wait to talk about this one. Are we going to get a service academy in the final 12? Because the Navy's got an opportunity if they were able to get a big win here. They're catching 13.5, though, so the books don't think that Navy's going to get it done. How do you think the midshipmen will fare when the Fighting Irish come to town?
I actually gave out Navy first half +7 on Jay Money's show yesterday, so that is an official play, guys. I took Navy first half +7, and I could see some people winning betted because the money flipped yesterday night, and now it's a lot more money on Navy. So full game might be hard to pull in, but we'll definitely be aiming for that first half simply off the fact that Coach Brian Newberry for Navy does a really good job of coming out early and getting on teams. They've been an outstanding offense this year. Everybody's talking about Army, but a lot of people don't know that Navy leads college football in points per play. Like, and it's not even close. They're about a mill a point, whatever that would be after the decimal, ahead of the next team. They're like, yeah, they're like 0.727. So they're almost a point per play. And the closest team behind them is Indiana, actually. Indiana's like 0.626. So that's just a really good stat to look at. It lets you know the type of offense you're dealing with the midshipmen. They're pretty high power, man. They're averaging 44.8 points a game, so basically 45 points a game. You guys know Riley Leonard is not that good of a quarterback, in my opinion. He only had 6 touchdowns passing, 3 interceptions. He's more of a runner than anything. 10 touchdowns on the ground for him. He's a really good runner. But I think that with Navy and the type of offense that they run, that their defense is used to practicing against running backs and quarterbacks that run. So I think that they'll be able to kind of slow down the Notre Dame run, and that means Riley Leonard has to throw it, and I don't think that's his strength. So I think Navy ball controls in the first half for us and is able to keep it close by putting points up and also controlling the time of possession. I really like the quarterback, Blake Harvath, man. He's been really good this year. Brought a new element to the Navy offense because he's passed for 888 yards and 10 touchdowns, only 1 interception, as well as running for 621 yards and 10 scores. So he's accounted for 20 touchdowns. Just a great job by that kid. I expect Navy to stay in this one. So give me Navy +7 first half.
All right, we're going to go back to the dogs on the first half, and I wish I would have done that with the San Antonio Spurs last night. And I'm looking at some of my NBA numbers right now, five-star, and I'm thinking, you know, with some of these dogs that I like, I got to go first half instead of full game. The Washington Huskies, man, they take on one of the best stories right now in college football, the Indiana Hoosiers. We have a close family friend from Indiana, and she is so over the moon right now. She'll get off the phone with my mom just to hear the post-game interview from the coach, because this is the best football we've seen out of the Indiana Hoosiers in a while. It's kind of funny because my dad grew up right by Washington and the Huskies. So maybe a little family battle for me there. Who do you think is going to come out on top with the Hoosiers laying six?
This is another one I gave out on Jay Money in the first half. You know how I feel about Indiana, and I just told you they're second in the country in points per play, and they're fifth in scoring. But they are missing my guy. You know, they will not have the incredible Mr. Rourke. Curtis Rourke will not be playing. He's injured. And this guy's a veteran. He's been playing ball in college now. I think this is fifth year. He's married and stuff like that. He just was a pro out there pretty much playing with kids. So he gives them a huge advantage. But I just still like the way that Indiana's defense plays. They only allow 15 points a game. Now it's down after that dominating performance against Nebraska to, I think, like 10 points a game. So I don't see an offense like how Washington plays. I love Jed Fish. I know he's going to get Washington back on the map and make them a top contender again, the same way Caleb DeBoer did and Steve Sarkisian. But the problem is right now he doesn't have that team. They were just like Michigan gutted, you know, through the draft and through transfers with their, you know, coach leaving and going to Alabama. So now he doesn't have much to work with. I don't trust their quarterback, Will Rogers. I didn't like him at Mississippi State. RIP to the Pirate, man, to his old coach. But I didn't like him at Mississippi State. But now he's over here with Washington. He, you know, under Jed Fish, which is a really good coach who has been playing pretty good. He has 13 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But I just don't trust him to make the big play. By what I mean by that is third downs that need to be converted. Goal line, red zone situations. Those type of plays he usually chokes. And so I think that maybe later in the game, Washington finds a way to get back in it. But I think early, Indiana overwhelms them. I think their running game is good enough, and Taven Jackson is good enough. He got some starts. He started 5 times last year. This year, he completed 7-8 passes for 91 yards and 2 touchdowns. So it's not going to be a huge drop-off with the type of machine they're on offense. So give me the first half only, Indiana minus 3.5. I think they are up by at least a touchdown or more in this game.
All right. Next one on the docket here. Illinois, talking about the best team in the West Coast. The Oregon Ducks, number one team in the nation right now. Illinois is catching 22. What do you think here?
Man, I hate that this is such a public game, but I got to ride with the public on this one, man. Everyone's taking Illinois, and I'll be right with them because I just can't see Oregon beating them by this amount of points with the type of coach that I know I have over there with Brett Bielema. Oregon is number one, but they're not a strong number one. They're not a dominating number one. They're not a clear number one how some number one teams are. I just feel like they'll just hold it down the position now. I don't think they'll be number one by the end of the year. I think they have a few losses coming, and I don't know if it's going to be this game, but they better be careful with Illinois. And the reason why is Dylan Gabriel has to have a clean pocket in order to complete passes. And I think that Illinois is a good enough defense to kind of, you know, rough it up and give them some issues. Also, Luke Altmyer is playing really good for Illinois. I like the type of quarterback play that he's bringing. As I said, the books are playing with your eyes on this one. That's just too many points for me to even consider. This is the first time these teams are meeting. I just think Brett Bielema had these guys ready to play. I'd probably take Illinois first half because we just talked about how these dogs have been kind of laying it down the fourth quarter. After a while, they kind of get overpowered, but they tend to start real spry and, you know, and fast. So I'd probably be on Illinois the first half on this one, but it's no official play yet. You guys stay tuned. I'll try to tweet out about this game later in the weekend.
All right. We will stay tuned for that. Texas, coming off their first loss of the season to Georgia, has a chance to bounce back against a Vanderbilt team, maybe the best Vanderbilt team I've ever seen. I don't remember them ever being good. They're actually, I think they're ranked number 25 right now, 5-star, and they're catching 18.5 points. Do you think Texas bounced back? And will we see some Arch Manning again, or is it going to be back to the Quinn Ewers show?
I think Quinn Ewers is hurt, man. Like, I don't think he's himself. As I told you before, I got a really good source who told me that he's still banged up and they kind of rushed him back because they know that they knew that they needed him for that Georgia game. The Arch Manning wasn't ready to beat a defense like Georgia. They better be careful messing with Diego Pavia because he doesn't fear anybody, man. They beat Kentucky at Kentucky. Really difficult game. It's 13-point dogs, and it's a rivalry team that they're used to losing to all the time. Alabama, they upset Alabama. First time they've ever beaten them, 23-point underdogs. They beat Virginia Tech straight up in the first game of the season, 13-point underdogs. So anyone they played at home that's been a top team, they've given them hell. And I expect nothing different because every team is going to be just like their coach and just like their quarterback. And they got a quarterback who's hell on wheels. Diego Pavia doesn't fear anyone. He doesn't care what's on the side of your helmet. He's coming to play. And I think that kid will be able to keep them in this game. As I said, Texas is a little beat up. Vanderbilt is being undervalued in this one. I'm on Vanderbilt plus 18 and a half. That's an easy one for me. I might even take Vanderbilt money line.
All right. There we go. Love to see the hot ones coming in here.
Yeah, they beat Ball last week, spread 24-14 is 27.5 point favorite. I love that going into this game. You know what I mean? If they would have covered, beat the hell out of Ball State, then yeah, I would have worried about it. But that lets me know that they weren't even thinking about them. They're just getting ready for this Texas game.
All right, talk to me about what's going on when one of your favorite teams, LSU, heads down to play in one of my favorite stadiums.
Yeah,
one of our XD. Can't find an empty seat. Texas A&M, they definitely support their team there. Texas A&M laying one, basically pick the winner. Who you got?
This is going to be a good game right here. I'll be watching as a fan. I'll be going for my guys. Both these teams are 6-1. Straight up this year, always a tough trip to Kyle Field, as you said, but LSU has done a pretty good job going there and being successful. This matchup is, they're 7-3 in the last 10, 9-1 against the spread LSU is, but if you look at the last five matchups, man, A&M has won twice at home. They won the last three at home, actually. I forgot about 2018. 74-72 in overtime. That was a crazy game right there. I believe that Joe Burrow was on that team. But LSU, man, they're turning the corner right now. They have some really good players over there. As I told you before, the offense has always been lights out. Nussmeier just had to get his feet up on them, but he had plenty of weapons. So we already knew that he was going to be good. But what's been surprising, man, has been that dog on defense. That defense has came out of nowhere and it stepped up. And this all, you know, led by this kid, Weeks. He plays like the honey badger position, like kind of like a linebacker, safety. And he just makes plays everywhere over the field. He's brought a whole new brand new electricity to that defense. Really has those guys fired up and flying over the field. You know, they already had some real ballers over there anyway. So I think that LSU is the more talented team. The market is saying A&M, but I don't know if Connor Wigman can match bullets with Nussmeier and that LSU offense. So, you know me, I'm an LSU fan, so of course I'm leaning to LSU, but I won't have an official play on this one. I'll enjoy it.
Let's move Sunday into the NFL. One of my favorite games. Oh, man, did this line move on me? I see the Philadelphia Eagles. They're taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. Five star, this is one of the ones where I do enjoy the fact that I run numbers. Just looking at this on Sunday night, you know, I said, oh, okay, it's a pretty close game. When I ran my numbers, I was surprised. I had a huge edge of Cincinnati. And I started thinking about it. And I said, you know what? I think I do agree with my projections here. Really, because Cincinnati, I think, is a little undervalued because they were missing so many pieces on the defensive end. They look so bad to begin the season. We know that Joe Burrow and Chase, they treat September like preseason. So I almost want to throw those results out. And looking at what we've seen from this team lately, I think I'm going to get the better quarterback and the more high-scoring offense. And if the Cincinnati defensive line continues to play the way that it has, I don't know if Philly's going to establish the run. If it gets into a drop back shootout, I think I'd rather have the kid from LSU and Joe Burrow. What are your thoughts here when the Bengals take on the Eagles? I like the Bengals. Are we on the same side?
Yeah, we're definitely on the same side on this one, man. We're going to ride the Bengals. I gave out on Jay Money Show, and I'm going to give out on here and as well on Ski Show. I'm going Bengals first quarter on this one, spread. The Eagles are the only team in the NFL that has not scored a touchdown in the first quarter. Some reason it takes Jalen Hurts a while to get going. Matter of fact, they haven't scored a point in the first quarter. They're 32nd ranked this year in points in the first quarter, averaging zero. Other hand, you look at the Bengals, they're averaging about 6 points in their last three games in the first quarter. Philly is allowing a 98.2 rating to wide receivers, and that's problems when you're dealing with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and that receiving core over there. They got guys everywhere that can play, and I think that they get off on them early and often. We're definitely on Bengals' first quarter money line at -125, and I'm riding with you, too, as well on the game with Bengals. I think it's -2.5 or -3. If you can get under that 3, that's cool. But the -3 is even money. So it just depends on which way you want to go with the juice. But I think that the Bengals win this one. Their defense is back. And we're going to see now. Lou Anamoru is really a good defensive coordinator.
Five star, this is a game that I have a strong lean right now. And maybe I'll get there. But the market seems to agree with me as this line has moved. The Green Bay Packers are laying 4 in Jacksonville. For most people, I think, you know, especially the Sunday morning bettors, that's why I don't trust betting splits that are given out on Thursday, right? The true public, they bet at 9 a.m., right? You see them at the window, right? Yep. I don't know how often you go to the book on Sundays, but if you do, there's a long line around 9 a.m., and I know that because when I go up to Reno, right, I'm part of that cavalcade. But most of these plays for me have already put in on Tuesday. So the early money likes the Jaguars here, and I tend to agree. I think, you know, the Packers are a much better team. The Packers are, you know, a true Super Bowl contender, while the Jaguars, I mean, they're kind of a floundering franchise. However, I do think this team's fighting for their lives, and I don't know. I think everyone thought that they gave up on Doug Peterson. Maybe not, because we saw an inspired effort in their last game, and surprisingly, they've done really well on the game when they came back from London. Most people would think that is a travel disadvantage. So maybe a couple points baked in, and that's why they've done so well against the spread in their first game at home after being overseas. I'm leaning towards the Jaguars +4, but I have not placed a bet yet. What do you think on this one?
Man, this one is going to be tough because, as you said, the market is begging for you to take Green Bay. Seems like a real trap game. Seem like I've seen this game before. Like, was that Aaron Rodgers a couple years, right? They had, like, the same number they dangled out here, and then they ended up going to Jacksonville and losing straight up in that one. So Packers better be careful in this one. Do we get a motivated Jacksonville Jaguar team? That's the thing, because their EPA per game is the worst offense in the league, man. By EPA per game, they're worse than the Panthers. So that's a lot to overcome dealing with an offense that we know is going to put up some points with the Packers. I mean, they're on fire right now. Jordan Love is, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's thrown multiple touchdowns in 8 straight games. Like, that's getting into rare air. He's up there with Patrick Mahomes and Brett Favre, and Dan Marino is the only kid under 25 to ever do that. So I don't see really how Jacksonville gets them off the field. So if the books are saying that this game is going to be close by throwing a 4 out there, the game has to go over, because the only way that I can see Jacksonville staying in this game is scoring points. But they haven't been really good on offense. Their receiving core looked better last week against New England over in London. Let's see how that goes. They got the kid from LSU who's a real baller. He's going to be there, and he's going to be a good player for a long time. But they also have 2 other really good wide receivers. So it's not like they don't have the people and the personnel to get this done. I just haven't seen it this year. So the books obviously feel like that win last week against New England has motivated Jacksonville, that they're going to come home and play well against an explosive Green Bay offense and a defense that's kind of, you know, making its own, you know, little noise right now. If you look at it, Jeff Hadley came in from Boston College. A lot of people say, why are you walking away from a college job as, you know, the head coach to come be a defensive coordinator in the NFL? Well, maybe he wants to coach and win a Super Bowl because he's doing a really good job. They run some really great exotic blitzes. They were giving the Texans hell last week, and they have one of the best defensive backfields in the whole NFL, real playmakers. I know they're going to intercept Lawrence at least once. They're second in the league in interceptions. So I don't know, man. Everything with my football sense to say Green Bay and lay the points. Everything with my handicapping sense that says take the points in Jacksonville. So I'll probably just play the over.
All right. Good compromise there. Another game that we've seen some market moves here. The guys that get into this market early, five-star, they love the Dolphins.
Yeah.
This game was -3 when it opened. I said, okay, if they lined it at -3, they expect Tua to play. It's confirmed now. But a lot of this money came in but before the confirmation. So I think this is just the market believing in the Dolphins. And boy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. What do you think of Marvin Harrison Jr.? Because I'm watching and I go, man, for a really good route runner, I'm wondering if, you know, Kyler's more of a freewheeling player, doesn't necessarily play in the system. Kind of reminds me of the whole Fields-Wilson deal. You have one guy who's just extremely talented and can make things happen spontaneously, and another guy who really plays in the system. Then I'm looking at some statistics, and they're basically saying he's not getting separation, so there's not a window for Kyler to throw it into, and that's the real issue. What's going on with Marvin Harrison, and how do you see this game between the Arizona Cardinals and the Miami Dolphins playing out?
Marvin Harrison is good. The problem is I don't think Kyler likes him. I don't think that they have a good relationship. I don't see them talking a lot on the sidelines. I don't see a lot of handshakes. I don't think that they really care for each other personally. That's for one.
That's interesting. I wonder why.
I don't know. I have no idea about that part, but I'm good at watching body language on the sidelines. And him and Kyler don't seem to be hitting it off. They really wasted that pick. They should have took a lineman, a defensive lineman, because the type of quarterback Kyler Murray is, he's just like Lamar. You kind of hurt him by giving him a receiver that demands the ball, by giving him a number one. He's better just having some guys who can play, make good moves in the open field, the Flowers type of guys, you know, the Bateman type of guys, they're speed receivers, they can make plays because it's a one-man show. The best success Arizona's going to have is Kyler Murray playing the way he played against the Chargers. And that's scrambling, running around, making plays with his feet, throwing the ball to everybody, spraying the ball to everyone being a point guard. That's the most effective way for them, handing the ball up to James Conner. So I think that Arizona is a team that's being slept on. I think a lot of people are taking for granted that they have a really good coach, man. Their coach he's a top-notch defensive guy, man. He knows what he's doing over there. So I don't think that people are also considering that Buda Baker is one of the top safeties. So he's able to translate everything that his coach wants to do to the other players on the field. And as you saw last week against the Chargers, they were able to play really well against a tough defensive team and out-tough them and play better defense than them, get more stops than them when needed. You would think that Miami would have a breakout game. This game spread with, you know, you got Tua coming back. Those receivers got to be itching to make some plays. They haven't had anyone to throw them the ball all year. And they have one of the best trios in the NFL at wide receiver. What's been slept on is that the Dolphins' defense has been pretty good, man. They've been pretty good. They're not as bad as people think. They've been doing a really good job. Dolphins are 0-3 against the spread this year at home. This one right here, man, is going to be a tough one to call, man. I probably lean Miami just off the fact that they're due a breakout celebration game where they score 30 and look like the old Dolphins, and Tyreek Hill's running down the sidelines throwing the deuce. Jalen Waddle's going over the top and doing his little Waddle dance. You know, I think that they'll get one of those in. So I probably lean Miami, but I don't ever underestimate what Kyler Murray can do on the football field.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Kyler, man. I wonder if he'll ever get there and really be a top contender here. So Arizona's
going to try. What we always talk about spread. Now let's switch out. Let's put Lamar with Arizona and that owner, and let's put Kyler with Baltimore and their foundation, their owner, Bashami, and all those veterans who come back every week to that organization and show love and, you know, talk about it. It makes a difference, man, who drafts him.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think that if you switched him, I still think Lamar would be a much better player. And the reason I say that is work ethic. You just can't get away. Whatever you want to say about Lamar Jackson, nobody can say that he's not completely committed to football, completely committed to improving every year. And we see that on the field. Every year he comes back.
You don't think Kyler looks good this year?
Not really. I think he looks to be like the same player. He's always been good, but I just don't see like the consistent improvement, right? He needs to get better in the pocket. He needs to get better at the timing routes. We know he can do the freewheeling when things break down. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see some more consistency from him, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes. He's in what, year 7 now? I mean, I'm just wondering.
I don't know how long he's been drafted. He's getting up there. Years are passing for sure.
Yeah,
but I just feel like the organization you are in determines the success. I don't know how many times I have to stress this. Like, whoever's the ownership group determines on whether, even if you are a great player, if you're going to be able to reach your potential. Yeah. Because, you know, it's only so much you could do with the Bidwell family.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess what's concerning me is the reports coming out that he's rubbing some of the teammates with the wrong way, with not taking accountability.
I think he wants to leave, man. I think he wants to get out of there. And I hope that he can figure, I hope that him or Bryce, my dream scenario would be this. Brock Purdy sucks it up the rest of the year. Shanahan realizes that he, where his errors have been. And he goes and grabs Kyler or Bryce or someone who I know would look great running that little offense. That's so easy, that would benefit their skill set so well, because they're both like a Brock Purdy on steroids, because they both can throw better than him, and they're both faster than him, and they both make quicker decisions than him. So
that's the only thing I think I disagree on. I think Purdy gets through his progression.
Purdy holds better. The ball so long, man. That's why he throws so many interceptions, man. No, he don't. Spread. Go watch the film. No, he don't. He's horrible at that. He's horrible at getting out.
We'll continue to debate Purdy, because I know that I have him ranked a lot higher than you. And we're going to get to that game in a bit. But this is going to be a reckoning for him. Because he's got to really prove he can get it. But let's talk about it.
Hey, these couple weeks we're about to see about what we always talk about that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And if he's able to carry this team,
you know, I'll give him his props. I'll give him his props. Yep.
Another player, right, who's a little struggling without his number one is CJ Stroud, 5-star. Okay. He's still been really good, and I'm not saying he's not a good player, but we've seen how much Nico Collins has meant to that team. The offense has definitely taken a step back without Stroud's favorite target in there. Now they're taking on the Indianapolis Colts, a team who I'm not high on. We've talked before about how there might be a little dissension in that locker room, because it seems like Flacco's the better option if the team wants to win now. But they are committed to Anthony Richardson. From what we've seen, though, he's just not able to take care of the easy throws. Kind of reminds me of Justin Fields, right? He can make the great plays. He's electric on his feet, but he's not making the easy throws. I would think this would be Houston's smash spot, but for whatever reason, this is one of those weird division games, and the Colts seem to have their number. The market agreed this was 6 when we talked earlier in the week. It's down to 5 with the Colts taking a little bit of money. And, of course, maybe the confirmation that Jonathan Taylor will be in there. And we've talked about how he means so much to that offense, because we don't want Richardson back dropping back more than 25 times. And for that to happen, Jonathan Taylor is going to have to be effective on the ground. This does seem like a great opportunity for the Texans to bounce back, however. We talk about the game passing guys by. I mean, Gus Bradley's still running that 2006 cover 3, not giving a lot of guys different to work with. And Slowick should be able to tear this thing apart. What do you think when the Texans host the Colts?
Slowick is the problem. That's the problem right now with the offense. This guy is not, I don't know what he's doing over there. He needs to simplify the offense. Just simplify it. I've said it a million times. He needs to allow CJ to play free. He's not allowing him to get in a lot of shotgun. He's always under center. And that's cool if you want to run Mixon, but you can run Mixon out the shotgun as well, too. Maybe Mixon doesn't like the shotgun. Maybe he's an eye back and maybe tells him that I prefer getting a running start before getting the ball. But it's just weird to me that they're not going hurry up at all. They're not really going shotgun a lot. It just feels to me like they're trying to make their offense into a Shanahan type of offense. And C.J. Stroud can run that because he can run in type of offense because he's that talented, but that doesn't utilize his skills the most. He needs some more of an offense similar to what Ben Johnson's running over there at Detroit for Jared Goff, you know, where he's in the shotgun, where he's got four guys going out and he's allowing him to make some passes, you know. This is first place on the line. Somehow the Colts are still right there with the Texans. Texans do lead the league, though, with sacks. They got 22 sacks. They're the only team with two guys in the top 10 for pressures in the whole NFL. A lot of people know Danielle Hunter, LSU guy that came back home to Houston, leading the whole league in quarterback pressures. And right there behind him is Will Anderson Jr. He's eighth ranked. So that defense for the Texans has been eating, and that's the problem I see for the Colts here. I don't see how the Colts can score enough points. One thing to watch for the Texans, they've allowed 8.2 yards to quarterbacks rushing. That's 31st ranked. That's right, you know, next to last in the league. So they do allow scrambling to quarterbacks. But with C.J. Stroud coming off a throw for 86 yards, four sacks last week, was under pressure 48% of the time, I got to think that that offensive is going to play better this week. I got to think that that offensive line should have some type of respect about itself, some dignity, and go out there and fight for this young man. The Colts won't have DeForest Buckner again, so not much of a pass rush. The Colts are third lowest pass rush, the third lowest pressure rate in the whole NFL. So even though no Nico, Mixon has been on fire. He's 100 yards, three of the four last games. The Colts give up 4.7 yards per carry. So I just don't see how the Colts can beat the Texans. They might figure out a way to keep it janky and make some interceptions or fumbles or special teams plays. You know, that's why I like betting on Saturdays spread. Sundays, man, it's so much you got to think about. It gets so janky in this Pro Bowl. They might figure out a way to let them cover, but there's no way that they win the game. I know that the Texans are going to win money line for sure.
Texans money line currently minus 232 offshore, which is pretty heavy for only a minus five. It's funny how sometimes these money lines don't necessarily
what correlate. I've been doing, Spread, to Saturdays, you know, we unload. We do good every Saturday. We all play the same stuff. Sundays, what I've noticed since I'm going 4-4, 4-3, I'm like, why am I putting myself through this headache? I find three or four really good teams that I know are going to win that I like the matchup in. Put them together on a money line parlay ticket. Throw like 500 to a grand on it and just sit back and watch football. You know, and if I lose, I don't really care because we made money the Saturday before, the day before. So it's a better, man, wrestling with this NFL is hard, man. We're some of the best in the world at doing this. So we can tell you, bro, this is a headache dealing with the NFL. These numbers that these traders put out are so on point, man. They are so on point with their lines in the NFL, man. You can catch them slipping in college, but in the NFL, these lines are tight, man.
All right. Yeah, it's definitely the sharpest market in the world. And even though I enjoy watching the NFL a lot more than I enjoy watching the NBA, I feel like I do a little better in the NBA because I feel like there's more misconceptions in that market. The Buffalo Bills are traveling to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Seahawks are catching 3 here. Man, so this one's tough because everything handicapping says take the +3 at home.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, Five-Star, I don't want to bet against Josh Allen right now. I think he's right up there with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and these guys that you just do not want to go against. So I haven't got involved in this game. Numbers kind of say to take the Seahawks, but I just haven't got there.
Yeah, the numbers say the Seahawks for me too, but man, how the hell are you going to go against Josh Allen right now? He's 12 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And you said he's clearly a top 3 quarterback in the league. So you know how I feel about Josh Allen. I've been riding him since Wyoming, and I'm not going to stop. There's certain spots that I always ride with him because he's going to get it done. You got Geno Smith on the other side. He's 1-5-1 against the spread in his last 7 home games. That's not good. It's not good. He doesn't seem to play really well at home in Seattle. I don't know if it's the pressure. I don't know what it is, but if the Bills are able to pressure him and get him off his spot, they'll win the game. If he can sit back in the pocket all day and throw it around, they can stay in the game. I think that it's very important for the Seahawks to involve Kenneth Walker III. He's the key to everything they're trying to do. I feel like he's just a fantastic weapon to have on offense, but can you use him right? We know the Seattle does have some of their players back. Mike McDonald finally has his full, you know, chess pieces to work with and put on the board and do his thing, because we know he can really draw some defenses that can trouble Josh Allen. But at the end of the day, Josh Allen has not turned the ball over once this year, not in the air. So I don't expect him to out in the Northwest. I probably lean in this game toward the Seahawks just because I feel like it's going to be a lot of money on Buffalo, and we always tend to take home dogs. But it's not an official place. One of those ones that it's a wait and see for me. I'll see how the market adjusts, and I'll give you guys a tweet about this game.
All right. Sounds good to me. Let's talk about Brock Purdy a little bit more, because I told you I do believe this is going to be a referendum on here, and we can kind of settle our argument. That's, you know, that's what's fun about these type of debates, Five Star. Yep. That's why I get kind of tired of the Jordan versus LeBron debate. Like, nobody's ever going to win. We'll just keep yelling about it till we all die. But on this one, you know, in a couple weeks, someone's going to come on and someone's going to say, you know what? You were right. You got me there. And we'll get back to it. And I feel like this debate's going to get settled here in the next couple weeks. And it starts on Sunday night. San Francisco 49ers. So, first of all, when I saw the line at 6, I said, that's crazy. I wish I would have bet it. Because I fell asleep, and the next day it's already 4. It goes all the way down to 4. Little bit of correction here at 4.5. However, to me, it's Cowboys or pass. This 49ers team is really bet up. I'm really still surprised that this line is above 3. I've not got involved yet. Like I said, it's going to be a reckoning for Purdy, and you know, I'm happy to come on here and discuss this with you. Don't know if I'm ready to put my money behind that take yet, so... I have not got involved in this game. My guess is you took the points with the Cowboys. How are you approaching this one?
Yeah, man, I have to take the Cowboys in the points right now. They do have the worst run defense by EPA this season. 31st in points allowed, 31st in red zone. So it can only go up, in my opinion, for the Cowboys. I do think they have the better quarterback in this game with Dak, even though he's not that much better than Purdy, with 8 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He does still have CeeDee Lamb, and he's developing a really good relationship with Jalen Tolbert as well. On the other side of the ball, Purdy's going to be missing all of his top weapons, maybe even Kittle. Is Kittle playing? Has it been confirmed?
He's not confirmed yet. A sprained ankle. So, honestly, I think that's a big part of that game just because of the run blocking as well. If he's out, that hurts both aspects of the offense. You know, Ayuk's out, that just hurts the passing game. Kittle will hurt everything, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, the 49ers have covered 6 straight games against the NFC East, but that was with a whole different group of guys out there. We know that the best thing that Brock Purdy does is to be a distributor, get the ball to his playmakers, you know, get it to them where they can get yards after the catch. Let's see how their backups do. Ricky Purcell, I think, gets his first look this week after getting shot. I think that they're going to have a Jacob Cowan in there from Arizona, a rookie. So they're going to have some young guys out there. Are they going to go where they need to be? I'm sure that Shanahan's smart enough to go back to old school 49ers football with guy man that's trying to run the ball. So the key to this game, if the Cowboys can stop the run, I think that they can win this game straight up. But for sure, I think I'll take the points just off of, man, the whole world's against the Cowboys right now. Since the beginning of last season, the Cowboys are 5-0. Against the spread on extended rest. So that's with the same regime, same quarterback, same key players. I like that a lot. I think that the Cowboys plus 4 will be the play on this one, and I think that they get it done.
All right, Five Star liking the Cowboys here. So there you have it. There's our breakdown for the week. Looking forward to this one, Five Star. Like I said, especially these Saturdays, I've been putting in all these plays while you and I'm like, notice, I'm like, oh, we got a lot of plays now. So excited to see how that turns out. And we appreciate you giving us all the wisdom. But, you know, let's say there's a guy out there and he didn't want to tail every single one. He just wants our favorites. Ball and parlay time. Give me your favorite play for this week.
I'm going to go back to tennis because I'm upset about Wei Zhang. She sold me out and allowed Tara to just beat her ass. I think that she was a little tired from her little latest win streak that she's had. But I'm going to go back to China. We're going to go to Japan. Let's go to Tokyo. My girl, Sonya Keenan is back. She upset her girl, Daria Castakina, last night in Rua Ona. and +170. Great job by her. Keenan's a real streaky player, man. And when Keenan is playing well, she can play with anybody. That's why she's the holder of the Australian Open, has been in the finals of the French Open and the finals of the U.S. Open. Because when she's on, she's one of the best players in the world. Right now, she's ranked 155, but we all know she has top 10 talent. She faces Katie Bolter. Katie Bolter is mostly a grass player from England. She's been playing pretty decent on hard courts, but she's really, at the core, a grass player. The books got this one all wrong. They're giving us free money on this one. Keenan is at +190. We're going to jump all over that. We're going to be on Sophia Keenan, +190. It's for 8 p.m. tonight, Pacific Standard Time. So if you're out in Houston on the East Coast, it'll be about 10 or 11. So you have plenty of time to get that one up. So take Sophia Keenan at +190. And also, I'm going to ride with first half USC -7.5, which I gave out on the last show. And also, we're going to go with the first quarter on the Cincinnati Bengals. As I said, the Eagles have not scored any points all year. I think the Bengals start early and fast. The Eagles have had problems containing receivers like Jamar Chase.
All right. Yeah, that was going to be mine. So you'll just have a three-teamer there. Give me the Cincinnati Bengals. I do like the way that they're playing. It might be a little undervalued due to their slow start in September. But this team's coming around, meeting their expectations. And I'll tell you what, five-star, it's always fun to bet against the worst coach in the NFL. Get that guy out of there. I mean,
Brett Boy Sirianni.
I've said it before. So let's say you're a diehard Philadelphia fan, right? Bill Belichick was out there and you wrapped this guy back. You could have won the Super Bowl this year. But it said you want to bring this guy back.
He's going to win the Super Bowl this year. He's going to coach Baltimore.
Oh, I want –
you know, he loves Lamar. He loves Lamar.
I know. He's all – the way – you know, if you heard his show, because he's hard
on
him. He
got a man crush on Lamar. He's always –
he does. I never heard him like a current player so much. He likes him more than – he loves Lamar. Yeah, that'll be interesting.
He loves Lamar, and I'm going to tell you his second guy, Jalen Hurts. He loves those two. I guess for some reason, he noticed that in his later years as football was developing, that those were the type of quarterbacks that were giving him hell. Because he could always deal with the Brady types. That was easy. You're not moving or standing on a point. I'm going to just take out your top option, double team your second guy, and blitz the hell out of you. And you're in trouble. But those guys still can make things happen, man. You guys hit that like button. This is episode number 22, man. We're getting on down in the year. Second week of October. Oh, excuse me, last week of October. It's almost November, right? It gets here so fast. And that's why we talked about at the beginning of the show. Rest in peace to the coach of South Florida, Carpe Diem, guys. If you guys had anything that you've been planning to do, stop putting it off, man. The wagering world is all about us being positive, about us moving forward in life. Health is wealth, man, and making the best out of your time here, man. Make sure to love your family today. Make sure to kiss your wife. Make sure to kiss your significant other. Make sure to hug your kids, tell them you love them. Make sure that you do the things that you need to do to be here for them every day. Carpe Diem, seize the day. Anything for the people, spread before we get out of here.
Man, I'm excited for another big weekend of football, and it's going to be the first full weekend of NBA, man. I got to wake up and do some projections on Saturday morning. Haven't done that for a while, so be excited to talk to you and see how that turns out next week.
On the NBA, you know, I just write you and Jay Money Ski Information. I'm not dealing with it. It's too much on my plate dealing with all the games that I have to watch. This morning I was up at 5 a.m. watching tennis, watching the ATP tournament. My guy Arthur Feast beat Sissy Pass. I was watching that early this morning before the workout and everything, so I can't allow a new market to come in. I'll deal with the NBA more probably during the postseason or something, because you know college basketball is coming, and that's another one of my favorite portfolios. And you know, they do all of the nice college basketball tournaments next month, so I look forward to that. They'll have a couple right here in Vegas. Guys, as always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. Hey, man, it's us versus the machine. We do this for the underground and the underdogs. This is the wagering world.